The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Thank you all for tuning in today. The case we're covering is one I've had my eye on for quite some time. I've been hoping it would be solved. It feels solvable, but time continues to pass without an arrest. So let's get into it. Amber Jackson was 57 years old at the time of her murder in 2010. Amber's life began in Riverside, California, but she moved to the San Francisco Bay Area as an adult, where she spent years occupied as a social worker. From there, Amber moved to the state of Washington, and according to her friends, she bought a grandma-style home. And those are their words, not mine. Not exactly sure what qualifies as a grandma-style home, but she made it her own. Amber decorated her home with fun trinkets and one-of-a-kind finds from thrift stores and garage sales, really anything that caught her eye. And Amber certainly had an eye for design, because during her time in Washington, she began renovating old homes, a passion that flourished for years to come. When Amber lived in Washington, she visited Hawaii for the first time, and she absolutely loved Hawaii. So she traveled there several more times until she finally decided to move to the Hawaiian island of Kauai in 2000. For some, this might seem like a big leap. Amber didn't have family or friends there. But for Amber, it wasn't all that nerve-wracking. She made friends and adapted to new places and situations rather easily. In fact, she made fast friends with a couple, Terry and Ken, who were also new to Kauai. Ken helped Amber renovate the home she'd purchased, and later, Amber helped Ken and Terry remodel their home. Ken and Terry explained that they were so close with Amber that they considered her family. They enjoyed her caring, funny, outgoing, and creative personality.
So was renovating homes her full-time job, or was that just something she enjoyed to do as a hobby?
Renovating homes was something she did on the side. Amber worked in a few different roles once she moved to Kauai, but when she was murdered, she worked as a secretary for the Hawaii State Teachers Association, and Amber was close with many of her coworkers. Amber's manager told the Honolulu Star Advertiser that Amber was an efficient worker with a great personality and many friends. Other than working as a secretary and renovating homes, Amber stayed busy. She often took hikes and went kayaking, and she even owned an organic lettuce farm on the island of Hawaii, otherwise known as the Big Island. Amber learned the business from scratch. It was not something she had prior experience with, but by all accounts, her lettuce farm was successful. In 2007, Amber met a handyman who had recently moved to Kauai named Greg, and he was about 16 years her junior. According to Unsolved Mysteries, at that time, Amber was looking to make additional income, so she decided to build a yurt on her property, which is a small dwelling with a tent roof structure. Since her new friend Greg was so handy, she asked him to help her build the yurt, and he agreed. It took about a year, and once the yurt was built, Amber asked Greg if he would like to be her first tenant. So he moved in, and Amber began to develop an interest in Greg beyond friendship. Amber was attracted to him and wanted a romantic relationship, but Greg turned her down because he was reportedly afraid it would ruin their friendship. It seemed that Amber's friends didn't quite understand her interest in Greg. Terry described him as loud, obnoxious, unfiltered, and hard to follow. And if you watch an interview with Greg, you'll see exactly what she means. He really comes across that way, pretty scattered. My impression was that if you were to be in a conversation with Greg, it was probably pretty one-sided. It's hard to picture him doing much listening or engaging in what someone else was saying.
So do you know if they ended up developing a romantic relationship or did they just stay friends?
Eventually, yes. They did have a brief romantic relationship, but we'll get to that here in a minute. Something else that Amber told her friends is that Greg had an explosive temper, and this worried her friends, but she always assured them that Greg wouldn't hurt her. So Amber came to terms with this rejection from Greg, but they maintained a friendship and they saw each other frequently considering he lived on her property. Greg divulged information about his past to Amber, including the fact that he spent 6 years in prison. And although the exact reason why is unclear, it was related to crystal meth. Because I don't know where Greg committed the crime he did. It was not Hawaii, from what I could find. It's difficult to research this further. As Amber's friends learned this information, they became more concerned about her friendship with Greg, but it got worse. Greg allegedly had a back injury that was preventing him from working, so she was receiving no rental income from the yurt when the whole point of having the yurt was to generate income. This had to be stressful and frustrating because I was thinking about it from the perspective of not only is she not making money from something she should be making money from, but she had to spend money to build it in the first place. She invested in this. I'm not sure how much the materials were, but regardless, she spent money on the yurt and now she can't make it back. Amber realized that if Greg didn't start paying rent, she'd have no choice but to evict him because financial issues were becoming too much to bear for her.
I suppose the situation's kind of a testament to what their relationship was like and how much she cared for him just to let him live on the property that she built to make an income, and she's just letting him stay there for free. You know, shows how kind she is.
I agree. I think Amber was a really understanding person and she wanted to help Greg in this situation, but it was just getting to the point where she was worried that at a certain point, she wouldn't be able to do that any longer. So Greg continued to live in the yurt rent-free, but by the summer of 2009, a year before Amber's murder, she told him he had to move out. According to Unsolved Mysteries, Amber went back to the San Francisco Bay Area for a trip, and Greg was to move out while she was away. But when she returned, she changed her mind. She didn't feel good about evicting Greg because she said he would have nowhere to go, nowhere to live, if she didn't allow him to stay in the yurt. And this goes to what you just mentioned, right? Like Amber is being so considerate here because I think some people in this situation would think, well, he's a grown man, you know, he has to figure this out eventually, right? How to get back on his feet. But Amber was very willing to, or maybe I shouldn't say willing. She was understanding of his situation. So Amber kind of took a different approach than just kicking him out. She went about it like, how can I help Greg make money so that he can continue to live in the yurt and I won't be hurting financially? Amber helped him start various businesses. He was selling fruit from a fruit stand and baked goods. And then it turned to Greg growing and selling marijuana. Then in late December 2009, we haven't gotten to Amber's murder yet, but this was about 6 months before, Amber and Greg went to visit her farm on the Big Island. And when they returned, Greg suddenly wanted to have an intimate relationship with Amber. This is what Amber shared with her friends. So the tables turned because Amber wanted that initially with Greg, like we talked about, but he turned her down for the few years they had known each other by that point. So all of a sudden, they go to this farm and he changed his tune. And Amber agreed to this because she thought that's what she wanted. Now, her close friend Terry worried that Greg was trying to expand his marijuana growing business to her farm, and his sudden interest in Amber on a romantic level was related to this. But she tried to keep an open mind and suggested that she and Ken could spend more time with Amber and Greg. But it seemed the more time they spent with Greg, the less they enjoyed him and the less Amber enjoyed him. As soon as it turned to an intimate relationship, Amber started to be annoyed with him. According to Terry, so annoyed that by June 2010, days before her murder, Amber told Greg she'd had enough of him and she basically wanted nothing to do with him. She was even considering moving back to California to get away from Greg, but also to kind of reset financially because she was struggling. And this is a sad part of the case. To me, I think because Amber loved Hawaii, she often said she was living the dream by living there. So to have to uproot her life after living there for 10 years and then move back to California when it didn't seem like that's what she truly wanted to do is pretty heartbreaking.
So we've really only gotten Amber's perspective of the relationship so far. Do you know what Greg's perspective of it was? Did you find any of that in your research?
Yeah, so he never described the relationship as boyfriend and girlfriend. He said they were really good friends who sometimes got together romantically, and he described it as drunken fun. So I think Amber's perspective through her friends that we're hearing versus Greg's is a little bit different. But I think his side of they'd only been intimate with each other a few times is probably accurate based on what Amber's friends have said too.
It's not really looking good for Greg right now.
No, it doesn't. But I'll tell you, there is another person of interest in this case who looks just as bad, if not worse, believe it or not, who we haven't even gotten to yet. So before you think this might be a clear-cut unsolved case, just know there is a lot more to come. On the evening of Wednesday, June 23rd, 2010, according to Greg in an interview with Breaking Homicide, he and Amber shared dinner in the yurt. He said they were both in good moods and had a nice time together. Which is a bit confusing because based on what Amber's friend said, she was done with Greg, but we know that Amber seemed to struggle with setting boundaries with Greg. So it is entirely possible that she did share dinner with Greg and they had a nice time despite her previous statements. Greg asked Amber if she wanted to have sex. She turned him down and went back to her house around 8:30 or 9. Greg reportedly watched Amber walk in the direction of her home and didn't see or hear anything unusual for the rest of the night. So that was on Wednesday, and Amber always got dinner with her friends Terry and Ken on Friday nights, but there was a change of plans in the week in question. Terry needed to adjust their dinner plans to be on Thursday evening instead of Friday, so she called Amber on Wednesday to let her know that they would be meeting on Thursday. Amber didn't pick up the call, so she left a voicemail and Terry never heard back from Amber, but she figured Amber got the message.
Was that unusual for her not to answer a voicemail and call the person back?
It sounded like with this specific voicemail, she didn't really think it required a response from Amber. She just thought, oh, Amber, I'm sure she got the message. She'll show up Thursday. So in this period of when she left the voicemail, and I don't know exactly what time of day that was on Wednesday, but when she left the voicemail and then when they were supposed to get dinner on Thursday, Terry and Ken were not worried about Amber. When Thursday evening arrived and Terry and Ken went to dinner, Amber failed to show. And she was typically prompt, so for her to even be a little bit late was out of character. But as the minutes ticked by, Terry and Ken grew increasingly worried, and their unanswered calls to Amber only heightened their anxiety. They called Greg to see if he knew where Amber was, but he told Terry that he thought she was with them. Soon after the call with Greg, Terry headed to Amber's home, and she told Derek Levasseur on Breaking Homicide that as she was pulling into Amber's property, Greg was pulling out. So they stopped for a moment, and Terry told Greg that she didn't know where Amber was, and she was worried about her. According to Terry, Greg responded by screaming obscenities and hitting the steering wheel of his car. I'm not sure how you're supposed to react to a response like that. I know Terry was pretty startled and she just continued pulling into Amber's property.
That's a pretty strange reaction, huh? Like you said, I don't think there's any typical or standard way you're supposed to react to news like that, but that's the way Greg reacted is definitely not at the top of my list for how I would react.
Right. I thought it was especially strange because according to Terry, all she said was, we're worried about Amber. We don't know where she is. So to suddenly start screaming and slamming your steering wheel, it would strike me as odd in that moment. And I was also meaning like, how is Terry supposed to respond to Greg's behavior in that situation? I guess she just drove off, which I mean, yeah, how do you even, you can't even have a conversation with someone in that state of mind. So yeah, I can see why Terry was taken aback by this. It's definitely perplexing. And before I move on to what Terry found, I just mentioned Breaking Homicide. I think I mentioned a couple of times, which is an investigation discovery program that was around for 2 seasons, led by Derek Levasseur, who was a former detective and private investigator. On the show, he worked in conjunction with families of unsolved murder victims and the law enforcement agencies working the cases in an attempt to move the investigation forward and in some cases even bring new evidence to light. Derek also has his own Unsolved True Crime podcast, which interestingly started within a day or two of when we started ours. He's also a co-host of the podcast Crime Weekly. So you will hear me reference Breaking Homicide here and there because it was featured on the program in 2019, and it revealed some interesting information. So Terry pulled up to Amber's home. She saw her car parked in the driveway. Inside Amber's car, she could see her purse and keys. I'm unsure if Amber's cell phone was visible, but we know her cell phone was in the car, which painted a worrying picture. Amber, like most people, likely wouldn't have left all of those items in her car. I know we weren't as attached to our phones at that time, but to leave your purse and keys seems strange too. Amber's house was locked, but Terry could see inside the house well enough to see that Amber's 2 dogs were wandering inside. And I'll tell you right now that that is all I know about the dogs, that they were safe inside the home. Terry searched around Amber's house in case Amber had some sort of accident on her property and needed help, but she was nowhere in sight. As she was searching, some of Amber's other friends arrived, and they learned that Amber didn't show up for work that morning, but she had the day before on Wednesday. Her manager thought that she might have been at a forum in Honolulu, so he wasn't concerned by her absence, although it was uncharacteristic for her not to show up. So they were thinking at that time, the last time someone saw her was Wednesday while she was at work. They weren't aware yet that she had dinner with Greg Wednesday night, making him the last known person to see her alive. The friends managed to get inside Amber's home, and although they didn't find Amber, they made several observations that made them believe something went wrong. According to Terry's interview with Unsolved Mysteries, Amber was a tidy person, the type of person to pick up after herself, make her bed every day, and put the dishes away. So she was surprised to find Amber's home in a messy state. Her bed was unmade, There were baking pans out. She clearly made coconut macaroons and they were sitting out with some missing from the pan. This information is backed up by the breaking homicide coverage. There are some pictures of the inside of Amber's home and it does look messy. Further, there was a 6-pack beer container box and broken glass from one of the beer bottles on the kitchen counter. Then there was a neck of a beer bottle on the stovetop. One question I've yet to see answered is if Amber drank beer. I know she drank alcohol in general, but I wondered because if she wasn't a beer drinker, the beer could indicate she had company. But I presume her friends would have pointed that out if the beer stuck out to them as odd. Additionally, part of Amber's kitchen counter was broken. Amber's counters were made of tile, and the front ledge of one portion of the counter was broken off, sort of chipped off. So Amber's absence combined with the scene of her home was enough to cause Amber's friends to call the police and report her as a missing person. At the same time, Amber's nephew, Matt, whom she was very close with, learned of Amber's disappearance, and he immediately traveled to Kauai from Georgia to assist in the searches for his aunt. When investigators with the Kauai Police Department arrived, they thought the way her home was found could indicate a struggle took place. It wasn't entirely clear, though. There was certainly no blood or any obvious physical evidence, and they did luminol testing in case someone cleaned up or wiped down a bloody scene, and they found nothing. The responding officer spoke with Greg that night, and when they found him, he was washing clothes, sweating pretty heavily, and not assisting in the search for Amber. The officer noticed this behavior, and when Greg came down to Amber's home and joined Amber's friends, Terry described him as cool as a cucumber. He told everyone that he had dinner with Amber the night before, asked to have sex with her, and she said no, as I already mentioned. But Bryson Ponce, who was the assistant chief and was an investigator in 2010, was interviewed for Unsolved Mysteries. And he said, quote, Greg mentioned that the night when he last saw Amber, she was almost having a breakdown. And in this exchange of feelings, he got upset a little bit. And then he says that he left and went home, end quote. Terry concurred, saying that Greg said Amber was depressed and that she wanted to move back to California. Breaking that down quickly, there are key differences between what Greg said in his interview with Derek Levasseur in 2019 and what he allegedly said when Amber disappeared in 2010. In 2019, he made it sound like dinner was fine, Amber was in good spirits, and they ate dinner in the yurt because he mentioned watching her walk back to her home. In 2010, he allegedly said the dinner was at her home, Amber was depressed and having a breakdown. It makes more sense to me that Amber would not be doing well because we know she told her friends just a couple of days before this all transpired that she was done with Greg. She was experiencing financial hardship too. Things were not great. I noted though that in Greg's 2019 interview, he said it's hard for him to remember everything. And I can understand this. This was a significant event. So you'd think it would be easy to remember, but it was also a traumatic event, which can affect memory. And it's not easy to recall little details like this when you're not asked to relay them consistently.
I feel like you could at least remember which location you were in. I would think you would remember whether you were at the yurt or at Amber's house.
I had the same thought. It seemed more likely that you might forget the mental state she was in when you last saw her, but it seems easier to remember where you were. And I think maybe I just have a really visual memory and you do too, but I'm quicker to visualize a memory than I am to remember what someone said when I'm thinking of that memory, if that makes sense. But he also, so something that stood out to me in his 2019 interview is that he talked about watching Amber walk back to her house from the yurt. And I thought that seems like a strange thing to add if you are lying, right? Because if you're making up a lie, I mean, you don't have the visuals to go along with it. So I thought that piece was interesting. But then I'm thinking, wait a second, the detective and her friends are saying that he said they had dinner at her place. So he wouldn't have watched her walk anywhere in that scenario. He would have been the one walking back. So I don't know. All of this could be explained by, I guess, fuzzy memory, or possibly even the memories of Terry and the detective being slightly off, but they, at least the investigator, would have notes about this situation that he can look back on. The Kauai Police Department had barely begun the missing person investigation when they received a phone call that altered the direction of the case. On the morning of July 3rd, 9 days after Amber was last seen, a local pig hunter called the police to inform them he found human remains while hunting in the remote and heavily forested area of Kailia, an area Amber was known to go hiking. According to Breaking Homicide, the hunter was chasing after his dogs because they took off from him. The dogs finally stopped when they reached a ravine, and when the hunter caught up with his dogs, he discovered the body, which was approximately 30 yards deep in the ravine, and that's when he alerted the police of the discovery. Later testing confirmed this was Amber.
So how far away was this ravine from Amber's home?
It was just about 4 miles, so not far at all. It was apparent to the police from the site of her body that she was a victim of a homicide. It's been described as a violent death. There were significant injuries to Amber's head. She was fully clothed, except for her feet. She had no shoes on, but she did have socks on. I've seen conflicting reports on what exactly she was wearing, but Bryson Ponce said directly that she was wearing beige corduroy pants and a white top and then black socks. With the position of Amber's body, they believe someone had to carry her down there. It wasn't believed that someone could have rolled her body into the ravine.
It's kind of a weird detail that her shoes were gone. Do you know if they were ever found, like in the general vicinity of where her body was found, or just they were never found?
No, Amber's shoes were never found. That's something, unless law enforcement's holding that back, which I don't think they are, Amber's shoes are a mystery in this case. And the location of Amber's body stuck out to the police because it was such a remote area and the person drove deep into the forest and people weren't driving down this road. There was no reason to. And they thought the killer believed no one would find Amber. And if you think about it, if that hunter's dogs didn't run to her body, he likely wouldn't have found her.
Didn't you say this is a pretty popular hiking trail?
I should have been more specific. So Amber had hiked in this general area, but not near or not that close to where she was actually found. So people wouldn't have been walking right past this ravine. But even if they were, she was so deep into it that they wouldn't have seen her unless they went to investigate because they smelled something. People wouldn't have seen Amber.
So how was the hunter able to spot her body? I thought he was at the top of the ravine where hikers would be.
So this is where I think having a visual probably helps. His dog stopped right at the edge of the ravine. He would not have walked up to it had his dogs not stopped there. So they stopped right at the edge. So then he walked up to it and looked down, and that's when he saw Amber. What I'm saying is that where this ravine was, you wouldn't be walking next to it normally. So he wouldn't have either, but because his dogs went right up to it, looked down and potentially were barking, or they clearly stopped at that point, he thought there must be something here. So he looked down and was able to see her.
Okay. So are they treating this as the crime scene, or are they kind of saying this is just where somebody dropped her body?
It was clear that this was a disposal site because with the injuries Amber sustained to her head, if she sustained those injuries in that ravine or in that general area, there would have been signs of it. There should have been blood. And this likely means that Amber's house was not a crime scene either, because again, with the amount of blood she lost, they should have been able to detect that in the home. I suppose in a house, it'd be easier to clean up blood than in a forest, but there likely still would have been some sign of it. But also, if she were killed outside, it's rainy in Kauai, so blood could get washed away naturally. After taking pictures of the location of Amber's body, including tire tracks that were on the road leading to where Amber was found, the police sent Amber's body to be examined through an autopsy. Amber's cause of death was determined to be blunt force trauma, and this was all to her head. They were mostly to the right side of her face. She had multiple fractures. Someone used substantial force against Amber with a long, heavy object, such as a bat or pipe. I did find it interesting that the injuries were all to Amber's head, and I point that out because you can imagine a scenario where Amber and another person got into an argument, a fight, and it turns deadly. But in that situation, you would expect Amber to have injuries beyond her head. And that was not the case. The autopsy revealed that there were no signs of sexual assault either.
So we know this probably didn't happen at Amber's house since they did the luminol testing and couldn't find any blood or anything. And obviously, you know, the visual test, there wasn't any blood. Was the yurt searched at all?
I know they went in the yurt. The police went in the yurt and searched around, but I couldn't tell you if it was forensically examined the same way that Amber's house was treated. That's just not something that was really brought up. But I would imagine if they found something really significant, then maybe we wouldn't be talking about this case. So I think it is telling that there hasn't been an arrest in this case. So if they did forensically examine Greg's yurt, then I would have to imagine they didn't find any physical evidence. When this case was covered by Breaking Homicide, they brought in a former chief medical examiner to do an examination of the autopsy results. The medical examiner indicated that Amber's head was held against a stationary object while the right side of her face was hit. She was not standing up or sitting and then struck in the head. She had to be supported by something stationary.
That would explain the broken countertop in Amber's house. You mentioned the portion of the tile countertop that was broken off. That could explain the broken tile if her head was held against that stationary object and then, you know, she was struck on the other side of her head with the bat or pipe or whatever it was. But again, there was no sign of blood or anything. So I guess that isn't totally plausible.
Exactly. Yeah. Derek went down that same line of questioning on Breaking Homicide and he asked if Amber's head could have been slammed against the counter that was damaged. You'd think something like that could cause the damage that was there, but the medical examiner said, no, it would be more along with the lines of what you were saying of her head could have been supported by the counter while someone hit the other side of her face with an object. But again, like you said, without blood in the home, now that we know how Amber died, it's nearly impossible that occurred in her kitchen or anywhere in her home, as we discussed earlier. And they don't explain it in Breaking Homicide, but the reason the medical examiner knows this is because Amber didn't have contre-coup injuries. I learned about this from another case I researched, although we haven't recorded it, but contre-coup is a French term meaning counterblow. So when a moving head strikes a stationary object, there should be an injury where the head struck the object, but also on the skull on the opposite side of the actual site of impact. Whereas just a coup injury is linked to a moving object hitting a stationary head. So we can presume that Amber only had the latter injuries. And this gives us a little more information. It tells us that Amber was likely not taken by surprise if this person had to push or hold her head against something.
She also could have been unconscious, right? When she was struck with whatever object.
But what do you think would have made her unconscious in the first place? I'm only asking that because she didn't have other injuries to her body. She could have been asleep, I guess.
Right, asleep, or she could have been drugged. But I'm sure they would have found that in the autopsy, right? If she had been slipped something.
Yeah, there was nothing that came back that was unusual from the toxicology report. And the idea, I hadn't really thought about Amber being asleep during the attack or when it started. And like I said before, there's conflicting information on what exactly she was wearing when she was found. I've heard white cotton clothing, But then Bryson Ponce said directly she was wearing corduroy pants. And I don't think she would be sleeping in corduroy pants, but she might be sleeping in white cotton clothing. So yeah, I guess that is a possibility. And in that scenario, she wouldn't have seen it coming if she were sleeping and her head would have been supported by her bed. And they said her bed was unmade, which is interesting because if she always made her bed, why was her bed unmade when they found her home? But I did see a picture of her bed and I was a little surprised that it was described as unmade because it didn't look completely unmade. It just looked a little messy, like maybe she had been sitting on the bed, it didn't necessarily look like she slept in it and then just left it as is. This case went down a totally different direction about a month after Amber's body was discovered. A woman named Michelle came forward to the police with an interesting tip regarding her neighbor. Michelle and her husband, who was paralyzed and in a wheelchair, had recently moved to Kauai and they spent a lot of time at home. So they became fast friends with their retired neighbor, Rick, and his wife, Karen. They quickly picked up that Rick was a heavy drinker, but Michelle and her husband remained friends with Rick and Karen. Now, Karen worked nights at a hospital, and on June 23rd, 2010, the same day Amber was last seen, Karen couldn't get in touch with Rick while she was working. Her calls to Rick went unanswered. So she called her neighbor Michelle and said, "Hey, can you check if Rick's truck is outside?" And Michelle noticed it was not outside. So Karen asked Michelle to try to get in contact with Rick that night, and Michelle called Rick multiple times to no avail. Rick reappeared the following morning, and when Michelle asked him where he had been, he claimed he had been hiding out on a beach because he drunkenly hit a parked boat with his truck. And if you're confused why that meant he had to hide on a beach rather than just go home, then you aren't the only one. I genuinely don't understand this explanation. And when Michelle looked at Rick's truck, she did see damage to the back of his truck, like an indentation. It looked like he might have backed into a telephone pole or a tree, according to Michelle. And Michelle thought that was odd because she figured there would be damage to the front of the truck if he drove into a parked boat, not the back. Michelle found the whole story odd, but dismissed it until another strange encounter with Rick made her rethink everything. Rick appeared in Michelle's home late on the night of July 3rd, the same day that Amber's remains were found. Michelle said she often kept her doors unlocked, so Rick walked right in and woke her up. Michelle smelled alcohol on his breath, and he asked her if she would set his truck on fire, because according to Unsolved Mysteries, Rick claimed the boat he drove into belonged to a gang. Michelle obviously said no, and he left. Now, when Michelle got up the next day, she noticed some fireworks she had sitting out in her living room for the 4th of July holiday were suddenly gone. Michelle was met with officers from the Kauai police that morning. They wanted to question her about Rick's stolen truck. And Michelle thought, stolen truck? What do you mean his truck was stolen? So the police explained that Rick claimed that he and Michelle were at a store together when the truck was stolen. Michelle was taken aback. This was a false story, and she told the police this. When Michelle approached Rick about this story he allegedly concocted, according to Michelle, he admitted that his truck was not stolen, and he actually dumped it on a remote dirt road just a block or two from their homes. Michelle and Rick's wife, Karen, walked to the truck and immediately noticed that it had been burned, but it was not as though the whole truck was torched. There was fire damage to the back seat of the truck. According to the Breaking Homicide coverage, the origin of the fire was in the back seat. If Rick drove into a boat, as Michelle said, he said, and he wanted to cover up that damage, then what does that back seat have to do with anything? When Michelle looked inside, she saw a bunch of fireworks in the back seat, and she identified them as being the fireworks that were missing from her home.
If you wanted to burn your truck down, I don't really see why you would think fireworks would be successful in that endeavor.
It doesn't seem like a logical choice to me to be, unless there was some other plan involved here, which is possible, which I can touch on in a moment, but yeah, fireworks seem like a bizarre choice.
And unless they were like some huge fireworks, but I'm sure she just had like typical 4th of July bottle rockets and small little rockets.
Yeah, I think that's pretty standard. And when you see the pictures of this truck, I mean, yes, the back seat clearly had damage and it was burned, but it's not like it was, like you could still see the seats, right? The cushions, right? It didn't completely destroy the back seat. Interestingly, Michelle reported a pair of women's dark shoes on the floorboard in the back seat of the truck. And Karen, Rick's wife, said, "Oh, those aren't my shoes." Keep in mind that Amber was not wearing shoes when her body was recovered. Now, Derek Levasseur had a quick phone interview with Rick and Karen, and he asked Karen about the shoes in the back seat. And she said, kind of, "Yeah, I kept random flip-flops in the truck." But when Derek pushed further and said, "Well, Michelle said, you said they weren't your shoes when you saw them," Karen said, "Oh, I don't know. Yeah, whatever." And she laughed. I don't know what was so funny. Could have been a nervous laugh. Rick's story about the truck was that it was stolen and found burned. And he said the police thought that teenagers stole it and were joyriding because of the fireworks in the back. But the police denied saying that. And that's what I was alluding to when I said, unless something along the lines of there was a bigger plan here to make it look a certain way. So if that's Rick's belief, or he's saying that's what the police said, even though the police denied saying that, the fireworks could have been kind of built into that story or the appearance he wanted to create if he did, in fact, damage his own truck. Rick was never charged with arson or any crime because there wasn't enough evidence to implicate him. In November 2010, a few months after Amber's murder, court records indicate that Michelle filed for a temporary restraining order against Rick. So this brings us back to Michelle sharing all this information with the police in the first place. She began to learn about Amber's murder and put together that the key dates, June 23rd and July 3rd, coincided with when Rick was allegedly missing all night and when the truck was burned, respectively. Michelle thought it was more than a coincidence, and the police found her to be credible. Rick claims that Michelle is a liar and a bad person, and a lot of her story can't necessarily be verified because there's statements Rick made to her or statements Karen made, but something that could be verified, and I have to imagine it was, would be the phone call she made to Rick the night of the 23rd that went unanswered. So that could back up that part of the story. And if you can bolster that part of the story, then it does improve her credibility overall. And like I said, the police found her to be credible. We have no reason to believe that she would make all of this up. Something that drives me nuts though is, was anyone's boat damaged that night? If that did happen, then that boat belonged to someone and that person could say, "Yeah, my boat was damaged that night." Although no one has come forward, but they may not even know about this part of the story. And if they were in a gang, then they probably don't want anything to do with the police. So yeah, they probably wouldn't come forward. And even if they weren't in a gang, they may simply want to stay out of it.
How would Rick know for sure that the boat belonged to a gang?
That's a really good question. I have no idea. Unless he saw the person who was near the boat and knew that person was associated with a gang. That's the only thing I can think of. And it makes me think with his story, right? If he, maybe he did see someone around the boat or hauling the boat because he was hiding out on the beach all night. If it was just a boat that was left somewhere and people weren't around it, then why would you need to hide?
Or there was never a boat to begin with.
Yeah, that's certainly what I think many people believe in this case.
You just needed to burn it for other reasons.
Yeah, Rick was, something was going on that night. That's for sure. Whether it's his story, whether it has something to do with Amber, or whether it's something else that we haven't even considered, there was something up that night. And I would love to know exactly what it was, because this whole boat story, I think anybody listening to this right now thinks that's suspicious and frankly, unlikely.
Were they able to determine from the autopsy how long Amber had been dead before they found the body? or before the body was found,
rather? They said with the level of decomposition, which most of the decomposition was just to her head, they suspected that she had been dead for pretty much the whole time she was missing. At some point after work on June 23rd, she likely died, or possibly the morning of June 24th, but I think that's kind of the window. It was either the night of June 23rd or the early morning of June 24th.
The reason I'm asking is if Rick had something to do with Amber's murder, why would he wait 9-10 days to be like, I got to go burn my truck, given that it was probably, if he did have something to do with it, he would have transported her body via his truck.
Right. I think the answer would have to be that he thought Amber wouldn't be found and he could keep his truck because he wouldn't be linked to Amber. But then I also think, wait a second, if there was some kind of physical evidence or blood in the backseat of his truck, and we don't know if there was, but in that scenario, you wouldn't want that there anyway, right? He doesn't want his wife, well, I don't know. You would assume he wouldn't want his wife or anyone seeing that in the back seat. So the theory here with Rick is that, like you just said, he would have transported Amber. And because the origin of the fire was in the back seat, the idea is that there would be evidence left behind. But I'm still thinking, unless Rick just never has anybody in his truck or anywhere near it, it seems like you'd want to burn it at some point anyway. But I think with the timing of it, it just stands out because it's the same day Amber was found and there was a press release about this, about a body being found. So he would have known if he saw that, and people were talking about it anyway. Kauai is a small, fairly small island. So when you have someone murdered, word gets around. So he most likely heard the news. So I'm sure you're all wondering, did Rick and Amber know each other? Rick told the police he didn't know Amber, but Michelle claimed that during the days that Amber was missing, people heard of the news and it kind of came up in conversation. And Rick allegedly told Michelle that he met Amber when he was walking on the beach one time. Additionally, Rick denies knowing Greg, but Greg says that's a lie and that he knew Rick. So someone is lying. And if Rick had anything to do with Amber's murder, we don't know if he did, but in that case, he would likely want to distance himself from Amber and anyone she was associated with. But Michelle backed up Greg's claim that he knew Rick because she said Rick introduced Greg to her husband when he was looking for someone to grow medical marijuana for him since he was disabled. When the police interviewed Rick about Amber's murder, he said he was on a drinking binge during that period and he didn't remember much of anything. When asked if he would take a polygraph, he said he would need to talk to his attorney, and then the police didn't hear back from him. Rick left the island shortly after Amber's body was found, and according to Michelle, Karen didn't know where he went. Rick eventually returned, but Rick and Karen moved out of state. And I'm not sure exactly where they live now. I know at one point, I believe it was Arizona, and another point, Alaska. But I found when looking through court records that Karen filed for divorce in 2010, the same year that all of this happened, but it was terminated. I guess they didn't want to go through with the divorce. The police forensically examined Rick's truck. It's unclear exactly when, but it sounded like it was well after the truck was burned and it had been thoroughly cleaned and there was no physical evidence found in the vehicle to connect back to Amber. I mentioned a while ago that the Kauai police took pictures of tire tracks from the road near where Amber's body was found. They just took pictures for some reason. They did not take an actual cast of the tracks. Derek worked with a digital expert to enhance the photos of the tracks and compare them to three different vehicles' tires: Greg's car, Amber's car, and Rick's truck. The expert's opinion was that the tire tracks could not have been from Greg or Amber's tires. The track pattern was consistent with Rick's vehicle. He was 75 to 80% certain that the tracks matched the make and model of Rick's truck. So this feels significant, but it's not enough.
Yeah, that's a pretty good confidence level just from digitally analyzing it. But, you know, and if they even if it was 100% certainty that it was Rick's truck, doesn't necessarily mean he was the one driving, right?
Right. A defense attorney could use that to defend their client saying, okay, well, maybe his truck was there, but who's to say it was him driving? Where's the other evidence that would tie him to Amber's murder? I mean, anyone looking at that is going to think it was most likely him driving, but you would need more than that. You would need something like DNA evidence. So it's been reported that Amber bled so profusely from her head that any other DNA evidence that could have been on her body was obscured by her own DNA. However, about a decade after Amber's murder, news articles came out about Amber's case saying that with advanced technology, they may be able to extract DNA from the preserved evidence that they wouldn't have been able to in 2010. But I haven't seen any follow-up regarding that. So I presume they weren't able to collect DNA the way they thought they would. And something else that popped up 12 years later in 2022 from KITV4 Island News that I'd not seen mentioned before was that Amber was supposed to go to a friend's house the evening of June 23rd when she was last seen to watch TV. And I thought, wait a second. This whole time, it seemed as though Amber didn't have plans or set plans after work that night. So when she allegedly had dinner with Greg, that didn't seem that strange. But with this new information, if it's true, I thought, how odd for Amber to not only skip out on her plans with her friend, even if it was just to watch TV, but also not notify her friend that she couldn't make it. And not just skip out on these plans, but to have dinner with Greg instead, the guy who she evidently wanted nothing to do with anymore. To me, this is really fishy. And it's a tiny detail, but it feels very significant to me if it's true. Amber's friend, Terry, said how prompt Amber was. So when she didn't show up to dinner on time, it was highly unusual. So again, just for her to not show up to her plans to watch TV and to have dinner with Greg instead, something about that feels wrong. And something I've not yet mentioned about Greg that comes up a lot with this case is that Amber's friend said she told them about a weapon Greg had called the Protector. This was a club or pipe, something along those lines. Amber said he kept it in his bedroom to protect himself. Now, when Greg was asked about this Protector, he denied having such a thing and acted like he didn't know anything about it. But you can see why it's significant. Because the injuries Amber sustained, based on Amber's injuries, this Protector object described to Amber's friends could have been the weapon. But this alleged Protector was never recovered.
That's such a specific detail and an object that you name something. It doesn't seem like that was something that someone would just make up.
If it didn't even have a name, if Amber just said he had an object in his home that he could use to protect himself, I would be more likely to believe Greg.
Yeah.
Or think that he might be forgetting. But
the fact that it has a name.
Yeah. Who does that? Like, has something called his Protector, right? I believe Terry when she says Amber told her about this. So that would mean, if she is telling the truth, I don't think Amber made this up, then Greg is lying or he's conveniently misremembering. But if he is lying, why? Why would Greg not want to admit to having this object in his home? That's the question. I looked through Greg's criminal record from Hawaii and there really wasn't much that stood out. He had traffic violations. Two different men filed restraining orders against him, but those were dismissed. And then he filed restraining orders against a couple of people. I guess that's kind of significant. That was about it until April 2023, when Greg was arrested on the island of Hawaii, where he had lived for many years at that point. So this was nearly 13 years after Amber's murder. Greg was arrested after allegedly shooting a man during an altercation. The man who was shot was injured, but he survived the incident. Greg was subsequently charged with second-degree assault, attempted first-degree assault, first-degree terroristic threatening, and illegal possession of a firearm. And just recently, Greg was found guilty of two of those charges, second-degree assault and illegal possession of a firearm, and he was sentenced to 4 years of probation. And when I say recently, he was just sentenced on August 20th of this year. So that information about Greg certainly caught my eye because he exhibited violence to the point of firing a gun at someone. And I don't know the whole backstory, but anytime a person of interest in a murder case is doing something like this, it doesn't make them look good. And before we break down the two persons of interest in Amber's murder, Greg and Rick, I'd like to talk just a little more about how Amber's murder could have been carried out. One of the most perplexing pieces of this case to me is that we don't know where Amber was killed. We don't have a known crime scene. If the police knew where Amber was murdered, that would be a huge piece of the puzzle. She couldn't have been killed in her own home or at the location where she was disposed of, so those are ruled out, but pretty much anywhere else is a possibility. So I started thinking about how her car was found, and I thought it was really odd because who just leaves their purse, phone, and keys inside their car? Then I wondered, did something happen as Amber was getting ready to go somewhere, possibly to go to the friend's house to watch TV or as she got home? Or is that just red herring? Maybe Amber did leave all her stuff in her car. Then what is going on with the broken beer bottle? It seems like that would have to be related to her murder somehow. But how? I don't see Amber breaking a beer bottle and just leaving it there. Most people want to pick glass up pretty quickly instead of just leaving it out. Did someone surprise her and she dropped the bottle? Did someone stage the scene? We also don't have evidence that Amber was involved in a fight or a struggle with someone before she was killed. So the beer bottle doesn't make a ton of sense. Unless there was an argument inside her home that moved outside somehow and something happened from there. Now, the kitchen counter that was broken, I suppose it could have already been broken when Amber was killed, and it has nothing to do with her murder. I can see that being a red herring.
Yeah, I just don't think we have enough information to figure out where it was that, you know, where she was killed.
Yeah, the only information...
Obviously, her house wasn't an option. I'm still not sure about the yurt. Doesn't sound like they really checked out the yurt.
Yeah, I would say we can only rule places out based on the information we have, meaning where she was disposed of and her house. But yeah, we just don't have enough here. And I think if investigators had a crime scene, that would be huge in this case. Looking at the two persons of interest, they are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, but I believe the police believe they have their guy between the two men. Starting with Greg, he was the last person known to see her alive. He had the means, motive, and opportunity to kill Amber. And what I mean by motive is, according to her friends, she had just cut things off with Greg days before her murder, and he allegedly had a temper. He was capable of flying off the handle. He also didn't have a solid alibi for the night. He claimed he was just alone in his yurt all night. And we'd have to believe that Amber dropped her plans to go watch TV at a friend's house and not tell the friend, if that information is accurate, so she could have dinner with Greg. And the attack on Amber, something we haven't touched on, is that it seemed personal. Hitting someone straight in the head seems like something someone would do when they're angry with that person. Not necessarily guaranteed, but it seems that way. And that's not necessarily a point against Greg. Specifically, more so a point against anyone very close with Amber who may have been angry with her. I think the biggest points working in Greg's favor are that he has this erratic and chaotic personality that makes you question if he really could have pulled this off. They didn't find any physical evidence that we know of to tie him to Amber's murder. And Rick looks so suspicious, which distracts from Greg as a person of interest. The police did a cursory search of Greg's car when Amber was found, and they found nothing of significant value, but they never did a forensic examination of it. And that works in his favor too, though, that there were no obvious signs of blood in his car, because with how much Amber bled out, there should have been some blood if he transferred her body, unless he waited until she wasn't bleeding and wrapped her body in something.
Yeah, I don't think it helps his case that he has such an erratic, reactionary personality. It seems like he could go into a fit of rage at any moment if he had some sort of disagreement with someone.
Yeah, I think I kind of had that working for and against him, because on one hand, it works against him for exactly what you just said. I personally believe Greg is capable of murder. He's kind of proven that with the 2023 incident. But I think for what happens after, when you murder someone, what happens after, could Greg, as unorganized as it seems he was, could he have managed to cover this up? That's the question I kept going back to. So I think it kind of goes both ways.
And he would have had to have borrowed someone's truck that matched those tire tracks. Because obviously it wasn't his car, or we don't think it was his car. The expert that Derek brought in was pretty confident that it wasn't Greg's car. But so he would have had to have either borrowed someone's truck or someone else was involved with him.
I agree. And we're putting weight in that expert. If we trust that expert, then yes, Greg had to have had help from someone else, in my opinion, because he had to use someone else's car, like you said. And it wasn't Amber's car either. So I think that's a very good point that you bring up. Now, looking at Rick, I personally don't believe his story, but that doesn't mean he killed Amber, though that story makes him look suspicious. It doesn't add up. The burning of the back seat is concerning when that's not where the damage to his truck was. The dates coinciding with the two relevant dates in Amber's case is highly suspicious. Could be a coincidence, could not be. He has no alibi for June 23rd. Then there's the review of the tire tracks left where Amber was found and the 75 to 80% match to Rick's tires. And Rick was known to abuse alcohol. And when alcohol is involved, people can do things they may not do when sober. Despite all the suspicious behavior with Rick, I've yet to see or hear a logical theory of how the actual murder of Amber played out. Like, how would Rick and Amber have crossed paths in that theory? That is the biggest struggle I have when trying to understand how Rick could have been responsible and what could have caused him to harm Amber in a way that appeared the person was enraged with her. I'll tell you all, before I researched this case myself, I was aware of it and some of the details, but at a higher level. And I thought Rick was a better suspect than Greg. But after researching it myself and spending many hours working on this, I don't feel as strongly about that now. And I have a hard time setting aside a lot of the information we know about Greg. And I'm not into conspiracy theories, but there is a scenario where they're both involved. I had been looking at this case with the lens that Greg being involved or Rick being involved were mutually exclusive events. But with the information we have, we can't say they're mutually exclusive. In theory, Greg could have killed Amber and Rick could have helped cover it up by disposing of Amber's body. And something I thought about kind of when you were talking about Greg likely would have needed help was that to get her body down in that ravine as far as it was, I don't think Amber was, she wasn't a large person necessarily. I'm not sure how much she weighed. She looks in pictures to be kind of tall and thin. So maybe she didn't weigh that much, but that naturally would be easier with two people. It would explain a lot. Then I had the question, well, why would Rick involve Michelle in any of this? And I guess the answer would be that he wanted to set up this story in advance about hitting the parked boat because he probably believed she would believe him. And if the police ever came to him, he could say, go talk to Michelle. She can back up my story. Greg claims that he and Rick knew each other. Rick claims he didn't know Greg. One of them is lying, and I don't see why Greg would lie and say he knew Rick. So if they did know each other, this is a possibility. Again, kind of feels like a conspiracy theory, but it would explain a lot. And interestingly, I found that Amber's nephew, Matt, who we haven't discussed much, but has been fighting for results in her case, he suggested that they're both involved. He actually said he doesn't know which one killed Amber, but he knows both of them had something to do with it. Although he doesn't think there's enough evidence to prove it. think it's always important to take into account what the people closest to the victim believe. So what do you think? Does this feel like a possible theory to you?
Yeah, I think it does, especially because they really can't get their story straight, whether they knew one another. And, you know, that could be used as a tactic to drive off any thought that they didn't know each other.
It kind of makes Rick look worse, though, for him to say he didn't know Greg when Greg is saying, yeah, I knew Rick. Because why wouldn't they both just, like, if they colluded, why wouldn't they both just say they didn't know each other? Unless they just didn't get on the same page. But yeah, I didn't actually ever consider this possibility until I researched the case myself. And it's just because I think they both look suspicious, honestly. And it would make some sense to me if they both had some level of involvement. But there's just not enough evidence in this case at all. And lastly, after all of the discussion, there's still a slim possibility that both Greg and Rick are innocent and someone else killed Amber. Although she had no enemies, no one else in her life looked like a plausible suspect, it still can't be ruled out until the killer is caught. I feel like I'm being way more open about my opinion on this case for some reason than I typically am, but I would like to know what you all think. So definitely feel free to share your thoughts in this case. I'd like to hear any theories you have, any insight or ideas you might have. And you can do that on Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast, or you can email us at keytothecase@gmail.com. The Amber Jackson Justice Group was formed by Amber's friends and family to support Amber's case being solved, as well as other cold cases on Kauai. They remind everyone that Amber should not be forgotten. She should be remembered as the free-spirited, kind, accepting, funny, and thoughtful woman she was, who didn't deserve to die the way she did. Terry told the Honolulu Star Advertiser in 2015 that it hasn't gotten easier with time. She said it gets worse every year without resolution. There is a $20,000 reward for information leading to an arrest and conviction of the person responsible for Amber's murder. If you have information related to the murder of Amber Jackson, please contact the Kauai Police at 808-241-1681, or you can send an email to coldcase@kauai.gov. That is all for this case, but we will be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.